is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The 2022 school year saw a spike in chronic absenteeism nationwide. In Ohio, the rate jumped to 30% that year, leaving educators across the state scrambling to get students back in class. So what approaches are working? Joining me now to discuss that and how school district leaders and elected officials are addressing attendance this school year are Cincinnati Public Schools Director of Positive School Culture, Manisha House. Welcome, Manisha.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Miami University Interim Chair of the Department of Family Science and Social Work, Anthony James. Thanks for being here, Anthony.
Thank you.
And Fordham Institute Senior Education Policy Analyst, Jessica Pointer. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you.
Cincinnati Public Schools and Miami University are financial supporters of Cincinnati Public Radio. Jessica, let's start out by talking about what do the numbers show? How bad is chronic absenteeism in Ohio at the most recent information we have?
Yeah, so I think it's important to recognize that this has been an issue before the pandemic. I mean, it's kind of always been around. 18-19, which was kind of the last school year we had before the pandemic really hit, the statewide chronic absenteeism rate was just below 17%. And then, as you mentioned, during the 21-22 school year, it had jumped up to 30%. During 22-23, which is the most recent year of data that we have statewide, it did drop to 26%, which is good. You know, we always want some kind of improvement. But that's still a good 10 percentage points higher than it was prior to the pandemic. And that statewide number can really mask some really high numbers in individual districts and regions. So there are districts in Ohio during the 22-23 school year who had chronic absenteeism rates as high as like 59%, which is just a huge amount of kids missing a huge amount of school.
Mm-hmm. Manisha, how do we get to this point? What was the impact of remote learning during the pandemic? Jessica was making that distinction kind of pre-pandemic and what we're seeing now.
I think first there has to be an understanding of what chronic absenteeism is. I think a lot of people, when you think of absenteeism, it's just those students that are unexcused. But when we look at the full scale of it, it's regardless of the reason, the student is not in class. So really, that's why it's not only just an issue that we definitely saw that the pandemic elevated for us and kind of put the flashlight on the situation, but an issue that has been indicated, you know, earlier in the broadcast that it has occurred before. And so with us seeing the remote learning in person and then the fluctuation between the two and the inconsistency of how we provided direct instruction to students definitely had an impact, and it really has changed really how we see and view the opportunities to teach the whole child. To be able to support the whole child. And so this is more than just telling people to come to school, but also how do we make our school environments safer, more conducive to learning, that students want to be there, and even opening up the doorway so that parents are involved and are a part of the conversation, and even our community partners, that they're supporting us with this effort.
And Anthony, that's a really great point to define chronic absenteeism. Do I understand correctly that that's kind of defined as students who miss 10% or more of school days during the school year, whether that's for because they're sick or just don't show up or, you know, any of that stuff?
Yes, absolutely. 10% is the number that's used nationwide. There may be some districts that have a little bit higher of a threshold, but that's generally what's used as the threshold for what counts as chronic absenteeism. Mm-hmm.
And in what the research that you've done, what are some of the other factors that have really led to this increase in chronic absenteeism since the start of the pandemic?
Yes, it's really a multifactorial issue. It's not just one thing. Certainly part of the reason can be changes in attitude towards education, that sort of a downside to the advances in technology has been, which is true, a belief that everything is online, so you can learn this. But that's not really the way learning happens for, especially for everyone, especially for children. And so parents may unfortunately believe that, well, it's all online, so my kid can learn, and they don't necessarily need to be in a classroom. And of course, there are consequences to that, and parents may shift the way they motivate their children or even what they require of them.
Mm. That's such a good point. Manisha, have you seen that a change in parental attitudes or family attitudes about school? Do you think that's a contributing factor for Cincinnati Public Schools?
I do think it's a contributing factor, but I think everything is situational. It just depends. There's not a really a one blanket attitude that we see. It really is individualized. Some people have the heart to send their students, but life circumstances prevent barriers for certain families, and they just need a community to come together to problem solve about that one family. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're finding, that a lot of times we're able to provide instruction in different modalities. It's not only getting them there, but having the student engage, having them engage appropriately at school, ensuring that they're learning and that they're progressing. Getting them there is half the battle. It's keeping them there and engaged is the other side of the battle that we want to continue to address.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about those barriers, but first I want to get your thoughts on the shifting attitudes, Jessica. Has concern over whether, you know, oh gosh, my child has missed school, has the concern about that, do you think, changed big picture since the start of the pandemic?
Big picture, I think, yeah. I mean, I think remote learning and online school made school look very different for a lot of kids and families. And because that lasted so long, I think we definitely saw kind of a shift. There's been some surveys where students have reported that remote learning made them really comfortable with missing school and that they just don't really feel like there's an expectation there for them to be there anymore. And so they're just kind of comfortable with that. And then there's some surveys also of parents who, even when their kids are at risk of being chronically absent, they're not really that concerned about it. And of course, we know like there's a lot of research and evidence that indicates that regular attendance has a lot of really positive impacts on kids, and chronic absenteeism has a lot of really negative impacts. And so I think kind of what you see is this gap in understanding where you just have a lot of families and kids who don't understand how important it is to be in school. And part of addressing this issue is making sure that you get that awareness out there and kind of help people to understand why this is such a big deal.
We're talking about chronic absenteeism and the strategies that are helping get students back to their classrooms. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Anthony, did you want to add to that?
Yes. So shifting attitudes would be one approach, but there are also some structural barriers that, you know, families have to navigate. I believe the three top ones are poverty, healthcare, and transportation. So certainly poverty is going to bring a myriad of challenges that, you know, can prohibit people from getting their kids to school. But healthcare, it's important to reiterate what Manisha said earlier, which is excused and unexcused absences, you know, contribute to chronic absenteeism. And so when kids have to go to the doctor and or maybe they have a mental health appointment, those also count as absences that contribute to chronic absenteeism. But even transportation, with lower state subsidies, you may see districts, we've had some local where high schools don't provide busing for students. And these are challenges when you combine with the fact that we've now have this infrastructure of online learning, make it easier for students and families to say, we'll just stay at home on this day.
Manisha, I want to get your thoughts on that, kind of these barriers, but also transportation. I mean, lots of districts around the region have faced bus driver shortages, which contribute to those problems. And I guess I'm kind of feel I'm my kids have been out of school for a long time, but as a parent, you know, when your kid has the sniffles, do you send them? Do you not send them? These can be confusing decisions, I think, for some parents to make. What do you think about some of those barriers that really contribute to absenteeism?
Wow, there are so many barriers. I think one opportunity that we all can help support is to continue to advocate the resources that families can utilize that can help support them. So, for example, in Cincinnati Public Schools, we have mental health care partners that we have that we have therapists in each school, and that is so important for us to be able to support the whole child. So providing school-based therapy allows those students that need mental health and well-being supports, additional supports than what the school can provide, can receive those on campus during the school day. And they don't have parents that might have transportation issues that say, you know what, I don't have the avenue to be able to, you know, pick you up from school, take you to an appointment, take you back to school. So I just keep you home the whole day because I can only afford to get you to the doctor. Well, if there's a doctor's appointment once a month, twice a month, that adds up. But if we're able to do that at the school, that's one less opportunity for them to miss instruction, or the therapists really work in the educational setting to work with the teachers to figure out what's the best time to service the child so they're not missing core instruction. So things of that nature that parents might not realize, hey, instead of going to an outside therapist, school-based therapy might be an opportunity for my child, and it might be what suits their need. And that's just a small thing.
Yeah. Jessica, you were talking about some of the negative impacts that chronic absenteeism can have on students. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, I think a lot of us know sort of intuitively that it's better to be there and learning, but what are some of those negative impacts?
Right. So I think there's two ways to look at it, right? Like, I think first is the idea that regular attendance has a lot of really positive impacts on kids. So when students regularly attend school, they're 6 times more likely to read on grade level by third grade. They're 9 times more likely to graduate from school or from high school on time. And then in addition, sort of what Monisha was talking about, when kids are in school, they have a lot of access to other things that can be really positive for them. So you've got the academic learning piece, obviously, but you've also got social interaction with peers. You've got adults other than the ones that they live with who really care about them, physical and mental health support, nutritious meals, that sense of belonging, like all of these things that are really, really important for kids to have that they get in a school building. And then on the flip side, you've got the negative impacts of chronic absenteeism. So when students are chronically absent throughout elementary school, it can contribute to a lot of weaker reading and math skills that snowball as time goes on. In high school, students who are chronically absent go on to experience higher levels of unemployment, lower earnings. And then just across all grade levels, universally, increased absenteeism can have really clear impacts, not just on student test scores and educational outcomes, but also on just social and emotional development. So it's really one of those things where not only is being in school really positive for kids, but like missing school can also have some really big negative impacts, both in the short and the long term.
And Jessica, it can have negative impacts on teachers too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously the kid part is the big part because, you know, kids are the priority, but teaching is a really tough job. And when you're trying to keep frequently absent students on track, that can be really, really frustrating. So in addition to teaching all of the kids who are present every day and all of the other responsibilities you have as a teacher, adding that responsibility of catching kids up can be really overwhelming. And the more kids that are missing, the harder it is. And that's not just because of sheer volume, but also because kids who miss different days and they'll miss different classes and they have different needs, and that becomes a lot to juggle. And when you add in sort of pandemic learning loss, it becomes even more complicated because teachers are already working really hard to catch kids up from the months of remote classes and the significant learning loss that happened during the pandemic. And so it becomes even more frustrating when you add missed time onto that pile. So what kids need to recover the learning loss is more time, but when they're chronically absent, they're getting less time. And for teachers, that can be really frustrating because you feel like you're constantly kind of trying to play catch up, and it's whatever you're doing is never enough. And that can really contribute to burnout and frustration.
Go ahead, Manish.
I just wanted to add, as well as what we saw, learning loss, but social interaction and some of the social skills that students did not have returning back or in the midst of COVID, things that we've had to deal with that developmentally they lost because they didn't have the opportunity to play beside someone. They didn't have the opportunity to understand the skill set of sharing or empathy to look at others and realize you're not the only one in the classroom. Or socialization skills. Many students lost those skills as well just because that wasn't provided to them. It was a different setting at home while they were on the computer by themselves and their families were on their own Zoom calls or Google Meets. And so there are additional skills regarding that students have lost that we're still addressing. And so that's why when we think about chronic absenteeism, it's not only just getting them to school, but when they're at school, how to help support them with some of the social emotional learning needs that they have as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And to add to those 2 points, sometimes we can think that these students are somehow set aside, but they're not. They're in the same class as kids who have also been attending regularly. And so just imagine the challenge that a teacher may have in trying to teach a lesson where some percentage of the pupils in front of them have no clue about what they're trying to teach. That certainly impacts those students, but it also impacts the students who have been there because they're at a different pace, they're at a different level. And so there's really loss across all of those different stakeholders in that classroom and what we're trying to do, which is prepare kids, you know, help them maximize their potential and provide them the opportunities that set them up for success in life. And so it's really a difficult job for parents and or teachers and what they're trying to accomplish in a classroom.
We're going to talk about solutions after a short break. And later in the program, a catastrophic flood swept eastern Kentucky 2 years ago. We'll discuss what's happened since. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about chronic absenteeism, and we're going to talk about what's happening to try to keep students in school. My guests are Cincinnati Public Schools Director of Positive School Culture, Manisha House, Miami University Interim Chair of the Department of Family Science and Social Work, Anthony James, and Fordham Institute Senior Education Policy Analyst, Jessica Pointer. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Anthony, we've talked a lot about the problem, but I want to make sure we devote a big chunk, the rest of this conversation, to solutions. What are some of the strategies school districts have been using to try to reduce chronic absenteeism, and what's working best?
Yes, I think there's been multiple strategies. Ohio has started to really focus on chronic absenteeism and put into place measures that help get kids back into school. One of its initiatives has been a state law that promotes having multi-tiered systems of support, many of which have used positive behavior interventions and support, and that has a family engagement component. And the idea is to have schools, communities, and parents or family members engaged in partnerships that allow them to share goals and think about ways to get kids back into school.
Manisha, talk to me a little bit about the impact of positive reinforcement versus punishment for truancy, because it seems like really taking a positive approach has been important in some of these strategies that are working best.
It is very important. It's almost critical. It is illegal to suspend a student or to have exclusionary consequences based on truancy. If a student is not at school or they have difficulty getting to school for whatever reason, we need to work with that student and that family. The approach of working with the families proactively, once we start to see a trend or even a day or two, there should be someone reaching out to the family to say, hey, we miss this student. Is everything okay? What can we do to help support? What resources do you need? And we're finding out that that proactive approach, so I'm so grateful that our district has allowed us to continue to have our social workers and attendant social workers in every school, that there's another layer of people that are making contacts besides the classroom teacher and the administration and the secretary. And it's not just always a cold call from a system saying that we recognize your kid wasn't here or they missed third bell, but that eventually there's someone that's going to reach out, that's going to try to problem solve with you and to problem solve with you with other agencies as well to help support. And so having that positive influence makes a difference because people are more willing to be vulnerable and address the need as opposed to punishing or just sending a child away does not address the issue of why the child can't get to school or can't stay involved in the school setting.
And what's working best at Cincinnati Public Schools? I mean, you've got a bunch of schools, a bunch of different, you know, students and teachers and families. Is there some strategy or approach that's really making the biggest difference?
I believe there's a multitude of approaches. Number one, I think, is staying focused on the whole child. And that is continuing to remember that having the parent or the family entity engaged is important in that process. Early prevention is a part of that process. Coming to the table early, not allowing weeks and months of school to pass before anyone reaches out. Some of the programs and things that we have going on as well is really supporting our staff with professional development about trauma-informed care, about restorative practices, so that when a student is gone and they come back, how do we restore the relationships? Being out of the loop not being in the classroom for whatever reason, whether it's medical, discipline, mental health, or for whatever reason, family circumstances kept you from coming to school, can be very isolating, and it doesn't allow for a student to come back. Increasing our opportunities for extracurricular activities has been a positive support because if students have a sense of belonging and they know that there are other reasons why they're there, not only with education, yes, they're there to learn, but they're a part of a community, they're more likely to attend. So there are all of these strategies that we have to employ because we're dealing with the whole child. And I would say continuing to develop community partners to help support with parents, such as Children's Hospital, help support us through Mayerson and other avenues with building resiliency within families, helping to support the needs that they have that could be barriers that could impact students, but also partnering with organizations like Stay in the Game to help us to promote attendance. And I would be remiss if I did not say that September is Attendance Awareness Month. So anybody that is listening to the call, you are a part of the solution. Even if you go back, regardless of when you listen to this, you are part of the solution. If you see students getting on the bus, telling them, have a great day today. You look great. You look sharp. You look like you're ready to learn. So proud of you. Keep it going. Like, it's a community effort, and we depend on the entire community to be a part of the solution.
Anthony, how can more of us be part of the solution? I'm thinking specifically businesses and medical providers. I mean, we were talking about, you know, medical appointments that sometimes kids have to attend and miss. How can more of us be part of the solution with this?
Yes, I think it's going along with what Manisha said earlier. We also have to have a structure in place. And so as Cincinnati Public, as well as other districts have done, is they've created roles where we have chief engagement officers, people who are responsible for building these relationships. These aren't relationships that just form out of thin air. No, they're through the hard work of reaching out to families, reaching out to different businesses to think about what the opportunities may be to help children be more engaged in that environment. Mm-hmm.
Jessica, we've been talking about the positivity that's really needed to help attack this problem, but what kind of consequences should students or their parents or guardians face when they miss so much school? I mean, it has negative impacts for the students, for the other students in class, for teachers. What kind of consequences make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a difficult question to answer because, as Monisha said earlier, so much of it is dependent on context, right? Like, and a huge part of this going forward is walking that line of like having high expectations and wanting kids to be in school and, you know, being proactive and meeting them where they are, but also making sure that you intervene as necessary. So I think really like going forward for most kids and in most situations, that idea of prevention and intervention and proactively communicating and coming alongside families and saying, hey, what are the barriers that are maybe keeping your kid out of school and how can we address those? I think that's going to be the focus for the vast majority of schools, and it should be.
Manisha, how would you like to see state leaders involved in addressing this problem? Is there more that could happen out of Columbus? What do you think they should or could do to help school districts with this?
Well, if they're listening,
they're listening,
which I know they are. Financial resources are always needed and to support, and especially regarding the needs of certain communities, just asking people to be there is not enough. The resources to be able to support families, whether that's providing additional transportation, whether that's providing additional supervision for families, whether that's helping them in different avenues. I think it's one thing to put a law or a mandate, but to have unfunded mandates without the additional resources for schools to put in effective systems in place and effective personnel to make and ensure that these things happen is not very helpful. Mm-hmm. So any fiscal resources that they can provide in addition to guidance, collaboration, I would encourage them to continue to visit schools to see how the implementation of what they put on paper is happening and how they can continue to support.
Anthony, is there anything else you'd like to see beyond money and greater awareness that for the state to do to really help solve this problem?
Absolutely. I think there can also be a healing of relationships. You know, this is a political season that we're in currently, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot about education and the role of education in our society and what our goals are as Ohioans for what we want to see in our children and what is the purpose of education and how it helps to improve our communities, improve our workforce, which there is a heavy focus on in Ohio. And so thinking about this relationship between education and a workforce, but also how it impacts communities, I think there can be a re-envisioning of what we're trying to do and the goals we're trying to achieve as a state.
Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Schools Director of Positive School Culture, Manisha House, Miami University Interim Chair of the Department of Family Science and Social Work, Anthony James, and Fordham Institute Senior Education Policy Analyst, Jessica Pointer. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Up next, a catastrophic flood claimed lives and devastated eastern Kentucky 2 years ago. We'll hear about a special event in support of the community. This is Cincinnati Edition.